Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, first, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed that Israel will stand alone and, he said, if we must, we shall fight with our fingernails. His comments yesterday follow a warning from US President Joe Biden, who said the US will stop supplying bombs and artillery shells if Israel launches a major ground operation in Rafah. Now, in a moment, I'll speak to Sarit Mikhaili, spokesperson for B'Tselem, an Israeli human rights organisation. But first, I'm joined on the line by Alistair Bunkle, Sky News Middle East correspondent. Good morning to you, Alistair.
Good morning.
A fight with our fingernails, but we have much more than fingernails, says Benjamin Netanyahu. That's a bit of an understatement.
Yeah, and it's in response to an interview given by Joe Biden about 24 hours before that statement last night by the Israeli Prime Minister. And in that interview on CNN, Biden confirming what I think we long suspected, but didn't know whether or not the Americans would actually go quite as far as this, and that is that they would withhold weapons from the Israelis, offensive weapons, not defensive weapons, but offensive weapons from the Israelis if they launched a major invasion of Rafah, which they haven't quite yet done, but are insistent that they will do.
Now, there have been some attacks on Rafah already. There have been casualties overnight. But presumably, Israel has sufficient stockpiles to manage without the next consignment of US arms.
Yes, absolutely. I think if the Israelis want to launch a full-scale invasion of Rafah, they can do so with what they've got already. I don't think that is really in doubt. But I think there will be two consequences of it, assuming that Biden followed through on his threat. One is, of course, Netanyahu would be just openly defying the US president, and you assume it would take what is already a pretty fractious relationship into a very, very difficult place indeed. And the Americans might decide that they want to impose more punishments, as they would see it, on the Israelis. And secondly, although I don't think it's going to hamper an invasion of Rafah, what it could do is it could have wider consequences for the Israeli military elsewhere. For example, if they were looking to have a limited ground invasion of southern Lebanon to push Hezbollah back, for example, that is where you might see an impact.
All right. Israel and Hamas delegations left the ceasefire negotiations in Cairo yesterday. So was the best hope for averting an assault on Rafah would be some kind of a comprehensive ceasefire that would lead to the release of hostages. It's not looking good from the talks. Is there any room for hope there? What do we know about the status of them?
Right now, it is not looking good at all. Bill Burns, the CIA director, who's been in the region for so much of the last few months and was in Cairo and sort of been sort of jetting between Cairo, Doha and Tel Aviv over the last few days. He's now gone back to Washington. I think that's a pretty good sign of where the talks are at the moment. Different sides will point the finger at others as to who is to blame. Certainly after what President Biden had to say on Wednesday night, it did seem to spell the end of this round of talks, to be quite honest. That is not to necessarily blame the US president, but many people think that Benjamin Netanyahu was just looking for an excuse to get out of those talks anyway, and maybe Biden gave him that excuse. I mean, the fact is there is still too big a gap between the two sides. Now, we have seen talks collapse before and then resume reasonably shortly afterwards. So that might happen again. Maybe, though, we're into a position where the Israelis think they have no other choice but to go into Rafah, because they are still of the mindset that the best way to get a deal that is satisfactory to them is to put military pressure on Hamas.
And what are you hearing about the situation on the ground in Rafah, where thousands of Palestinians have been fleeing from over the last number of days, but there's still obviously hundreds of thousands of people there?
Yeah, very difficult indeed. So the fighting is ongoing, particularly on the eastern edges of Rafah and in and around the Rafah crossing, which isn't actually in Rafah city itself. But there is fighting ongoing around there and getting pretty fierce from what I'm hearing. A lot of people have left, tens of thousands of people have left Rafah sort of in anticipation of a wider, deeper Israeli push into the city. So they're going to Al-Mawasi, which is a sort of a strip of land on the coast, on the western coast, utterly unsuitable, really, for any kind of long-term inhabitation. It's a very sandy, desolate part of Gaza, but it's now become something of a refugee camp. And I would say there's probably in the region of 1.2, 1.3 million people still in Rafah. So the concerns about a land invasion turning into a humanitarian crisis, I think those concerns still remain.
And the flow of aid to people who are living in Rafah at the moment, it was one of the areas where at least there was a trickle of aid coming in through the southern Rafah crossing. Israel took control of that a number of days ago, and Kerem Shalom was also not allowing aid through recently as well. So what is the situation with the flow of humanitarian aid into Gaza?
Okay, so I think you've sort of got four points that you know I'd go to. So Kerem Shalom is the main crossing point between Israel and Gaza. It's right down in the south. It has been closed over recent days because rocket fire has been directed at it. I think more rocket fire went at it today. I think it is, from what I gather within the last hour or two, it is still open. But obviously, it's pretty risky for aid agencies to go and get the aid from there because of the fighting in and around it. Then you've got the Rafah crossing, which goes from Gaza into Egypt. That has also been a major aid crossing point, particularly for fuel. All the fuel going to Gaza goes through there. But that is closed because of the Israeli military operations. And so that is probably the greatest concern, the fact that fuel is not getting into Gaza because Rafah is closed. Further north, you've got the Erez crossing, which is recently opened. It used to be the foot crossing for journalists like myself to go into Gaza. That goes directly into the north. That is open still, but only a limited amount of aid going in there every day. And then fourthly, this US military pier that's being built. They had hoped that would be up and running last week, but from what I heard about 3 hours ago, it's still not yet completed. And so there is a ship that's left Cyprus, but it's kind of it's been halted halfway, awaiting for that pier to be finished, which has not happened yet.
And just with regard to, you know, again, if an offensive does go ahead, what hospitals are functional on any level in Rafah to cope with the size of the population there and the potential casualties that might result from an attack?
Well, so the established bricks and mortar hospitals, if you like, very, very few. And the ones that are still functioning are functioning on much reduced capacity and capability, and that's going to be reduced even further unless fuel can start getting into Gaza, because they rely so heavily on fuel to run electricity generators and their medical equipment, etc. What you've got, though, around the Rafah area and Al-Mawasi is a number of field hospitals that have been established in recent months. The British have put one around the Mawasi area. There's an Emirati one, I think there's a Jordanian one as well. They're sort of temporary structures, you know, pretty impressive, but certainly, you know, not able to deal with mass casualties if that's what it comes to. But they are there. But as I say, if you did have heavy fighting and we saw casualty levels similar to what we saw in Khan Yunis and Gaza City, well, those field hospitals are just not going to be good enough, big enough, or capable enough, really, to deal with it.
Okay. All right. Alistair Bunkle, Sky News Middle East correspondent. Thanks for joining us on that. I'm also joined now by Sarit Makayili, the spokesperson for B'Tselem, which is an Israeli human rights organisation. Good morning to you, Sarit.
Good morning, Colin.
Your organisation has been calling for a ceasefire for a long time. What has the response been?
Well, certainly the Israeli government is not indicating that it has any intention to move forward with ending this war. On the contrary, we keep hearing again and again, only this morning, the Prime Minister promising, you know, as you yourself reported, that Israel will just continue indefinitely with this war. Next week, Israeli settlers, totally, like broadly supported by the government and by government ministers, are planning a parade, a march, demanding the resettlement of Gaza. So unless there is serious international action, this is where we are heading.
And for a human rights organisation like yourself that has made a consistent call for peace and is making a call for a ceasefire at the moment, how much support do you have? Because politically, I suppose, traditionally parties who would have been sympathetic to your viewpoint haven't enjoyed good fortune in the polls and elections in Israel recently.
Well, since the, I mean, absolutely, there. It's hard for me to comment on public opinion per se. There have been various public opinion surveys on which gave conflicting results, but I do think it's very clear that since the horrors, the atrocities perpetrated by Hamas on October 7th, many Israelis wanted revenge, and many Israelis support this never-ending Israeli operation in Gaza that has led to the killing of almost 40,000 Palestinians currently, and to this humanitarian catastrophe that you've just heard again. However, I do think there is a growing understanding among Israelis that the necessary deal that we have to reach in order to bring back the Israeli hostages, the 132 hostages who have been in Gaza for 217 days now, that has to include a ceasefire. There is no way you can, you know, have those things, and this claim that military pressure will somehow bring back the hostages is simply a lie. The latest person to say that was a former Israeli chief of staff who acknowledged that this is not a possibility. And I do think there is a growing call among many Israelis who understand this to move towards a ceasefire, including a hostage deal. This is, you know, both just part and parcel of the same thing. The problem is, though, that the internal pressure on Prime Minister Netanyahu, and I can say this, you know, as an Israeli who's very keenly observing the situation in my society, the internal pressure politically and Netanyahu's own political necessity to escape his trial are leading us in this route for, you know, to an eternal conflict, because this is serving the political interests both of the Israeli far right and also of the Prime Minister. The only way to circumvent this is through international engagement, international pressure, the international community using its own leverage, because we internally inside Israel are not able to promote this change.
And what, in your view, would be effective international pressure? Here in Ireland, the government is advancing, I suppose, efforts within the European Union to recognise a state of Palestine. They've called for a review of the association agreement with Israel and under the Human Rights Clause there. Is that the kind of action you're talking about?
So B'Tselem doesn't have the ability, and I also don't think it's right for us to recommend specific foreign policy actions to international governments. But what we do say, and we've said again and again, I think it's becoming very clear now, that statements alone are not going to make effective change, that we need action, that we need this to be clear and directed at Israeli policymakers, and that the people who are setting policies, and especially Prime Minister Netanyahu, understand that the categoric view of the international community is this mass killing now that we are fearing in Rafah if Israel proceeds with its operation is simply unacceptable. That there is not, you know, that all of these international calls that we've heard again and again for Israel to adhere to the laws of armed conflict, to protect civilians in Gaza, those are just hypothetical calls that are totally unrelated to any sort of reality. The reality is Israel's repeatedly proven it has no intention to avoid harming civilians in Gaza. And if we see another operation now in Rafah, we're going to see more of the same, and this is going to be catastrophic.
All right, Sarit Mikhaeli, spokesperson for B'Tselem, the Israeli human rights organisation. Thanks very much for joining us. And before that, we heard Alistair Bunkle, Sky News Middle East correspondent. Coming up, we're going live to Malmo and Macroom.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.